Over the past couple of weeks, several members of the congregation have come up to me and said that my daughter has learned a new word. And you're all thinking, what word did she learn? The word she has learned is no. And she's known it probably for a while, but she's really found the real power of the word no. She uses it a lot more than we expect. She uses it to say, no, I don't want that, to no singing. In fact, we went to the state fair yesterday, and at the state fair, there was a little girl who was about to touch a pig, and she went, no touch. It's like, no, you can't say that to people. But if I didn't know better, I would guess that no is her favorite word. But the increasing of the use of no in our household is not just limited to her. As she explores our world, as she travels around the house, I find that I'm using no more often. Because while I would love to redirect her in so many situations, sometimes there's just not a good replacement for the word no. Because no is a great boundary word. When you say no, you want something to stop. No. In that simple syllable, I communicate my refusal, express my disagreement with the actions. In an instant, I create that line that says, this is my line in the sand, I want you to stop. So I am impressed in our gospel story that James, John, and Peter do not say no. Throughout the story, it seems like there would be a point when these men would say, all right, Jesus, we have enough. We're calling the boundary. We're saying no. Imagine you are Peter. You're on the shore cleaning your nets, right? And after an unsuccessful night of where you stayed up all night trying to catch fish, and you've caught nothing, so at the end, you're cleaning your nets, and Jesus comes up to you with this large crowd coming in and says, take me out onto the water. And I think to myself, I would want to say no to Jesus. Say, no, Jesus, I'm really too tired. Just stay on the shore, right? I think we can all feel that. Then Jesus goes out on the water. He speaks. He teaches. You've been good. You've listened to him talk. You've said nothing. But now what happens is he wants to go out farther. So after, well, I want you to let down your nets again. After a hard night's work, after you have cleaned your nets, he wants you to put them back out again. And I think about how tempting it would be at that moment if I were Peter to say, no, Jesus, I've been good. I think it's time for us to go in. And then at the end, finally, after listening to him again, after allowing him to say, I'm going to fish again, you return to the shore. After hauling in the largest catch you've probably ever caught, so much that your nets were about to break, so much that the fish on your boat are actually making your boat sink. Imagine the work that goes into that. How much effort you have to put in to pull that in after a long night of not catching anything, a long day of listening to Jesus preach, the rowing out, the rowing in. And then Jesus tells them again, follow me. And instead of saying no, they go along. And in doing that, they leave behind quite a bit. They leave behind their father, their nets, their boats. They leave it all behind because Jesus calls them. And instead of saying no and stopping it right there, they go along. Often when we talk about the call, the response to calls, to God's call, we often describe it like our passage from Isaiah, where God says, whom shall I send? And we'll do it in our gospel hymn, right? Well, whom shall I send? And then the answer to that is, here I am, Lord, with a big exclamation point, right? Pick me, pick me, pick me, right? But often when we talk about it, you know, we're ready to go, ready to excited, we're ready, we see exactly what Jesus is calling us to do, And we're excited for it, right? That's always how you feel about your call, right? Oftentimes, what I have experienced is that often when God calls us to do things that are a little bit out of our comfort zone. So instead of it being that strong, excited yes, it's probably a little bit like the disciples in this passage. It's not a no. God, if you want me to fish, we haven't caught anything, but I will do it if that's what you want. It's not the no. It's the lack of no. Because it's a reminder that it's so hard sometimes to be excited for the ministry that God is calling us to. But that God calls us to it, and our faith says we're going to do it because we think God is calling us to it. That it's not so much an excited yes, it's an acceptance of God's call. Saying, God, I can't always see this, I'm tired, but I will respond. And it's in that response that we begin to see God's action in the world. One of my favorite things about this passage, it seems like it's progressing. So at the beginning, Peter is invited to take Jesus out just a little bit out into the water, right? Just a simple task. Just go a little bit farther. Just let me creationably go. The next question is a little bit bigger. He asks Peter, he says, Peter, take me out a little bit farther. We're going to fish. We're going to take in the fish, right? And then he sees the revelation. He sees these fish come into the boat. And the third and most difficult one is they get back to shore, and Jesus says, follow me. Often when we think about Peter getting out of a boat, we think of the story where he walks on water, right? He goes out, he walks on water, he's walking across, and that's the great faith moment. But I think there's a really great faith moment here. He gets out of the boat, and he follows God. Sure, he's not walking on water, but imagine how much faith it takes to say, I'm going to give up my economic future. I'm going to say to my partner, my business partner, I'm done, I'm going. Most scholars argue that Peter's actually quite a good fisherman. He's successful enough that he actually has multiple boats. He's not a man who has just one boat. He is a man who has a fleet. And when God calls him, he calls him to leave that behind. But it's a call that doesn't just make it seem like, all right, give this up. When he gets that call, he begins to see God's revelation. At first, it begins with just listening to Jesus teach. After that, he'll see the fish come on board and see that something special is coming. When we talk about Peter, we talk about one of the chief disciples. One of the disciples that follows Christ all the way. We hear more about him than any other disciple in the Bible, with the exception of Paul, who writes about himself quite a bit. Right? And it's this idea that often what starts with, often when people describe faith, they act out almost like we have to be ready to accept. Ready to go, I'm gung-ho, I can see where God is calling me. And what I found out often in faith is it's really hard to see where God is calling us. Because God can see the whole picture. And I can only see so little. What I depend more than on my eyesight, my ability to see, is my ability to hear. To say when God asks for something, even in my uncomfortableness, even if I'm not excited about it, to say, maybe that's an option. To not fully say no. I was reminded about this a couple weeks ago when I did the cold weather shelter at Trinity. And of course I showed up, and I had no clue what was going to happen. And I'm sitting there, and then they find out that their heater is broken. And I know I'm complaining about the Florida temperatures right now, so if you are from the north, please apologize. But being in a room that is about 60 degrees, trying to stay warm and awake is really difficult. You deal with a population who is mostly homeless. a population that has mental health issues, a place that I find that I was uncomfortable. And you say to yourself, where would a pastor be uncomfortable with? I mean, I see all kinds of things. I go to hospital rooms. I deal with faith crisis, all these things. But I was in an unfamiliar place, experienced with unfamiliar people. Not sure of what my role would be in that. And what I find in that is this. Even in my uncomfortableness, my most physical and mental uncomfortableness, you see this beauty of God. Because when we talk about people who are struggling to survive, they're struggling to survive on the street, you hear the call of God, because what you see God saying, I really want this shelter to happen, right? They say, we really want to see this go forward. God has built this shelter. Not that God has built a shelter. Let me refocus for a second. I'm in the shelter. I'm uncomfortable. I don't know what to do. And then I realize what happens is that I've seen God at work through me and the other people in the shelter. Because what would happen is if this shelter did not exist, these people would be cold. They'd be out in that cold weather that we get for about a week. They'd be exposed. They'd get complications of health issues. All those things that go with it. But in that, you see this compassion and warmth being shared with them that a world usually looks at the homeless and says, we've all done it, where we've driven by them. No, I'm not going to give you money today. I'm not going to stop and give you anything. And when we do this, what you see in the reverse of it is when we say, no, we're not really sure who's going to show up. I think this is what God is calling us to do. I think we see a glimpse of the hope we have in this world. That God so loves the world that God gives enough of us. That God calls us to change our world so much that even the smallest actions we do have impact. And that at first things that make us uncomfortable, things that leave us in a strange place, eventually will lead us to something more beautiful. Because when we look back in those moments and we say, God, I was really uncomfortable in this situation. But it was the best decision I could have done. Because when I looked in that situation, I saw you present. And in those moments, they remind us of the one truth that's really important. God is alive. It's easy in our world to ignore God and see, God, where are you in this world? And what we find is that if we listen to that call and we respond, we will find God. And what we find happens is it's not so much what it does to others. It's about what it does to us. It doesn't just build them up. It doesn't just protect them for a day or for a night. It builds up our faith. It refreshes us in a way that we can see these miracles and then we can begin to be changed by it. We can begin to see that God has not abandoned humanity to a life of brokenness, but rather that God has built humanity up, not through acts of strength, but through an act of grace. That God chooses to love us even if we don't think we're worthy of it. Even if we are the worst person in this world, God loves us. And that God calls us to share that love. Because the love that God gives is a love of grace. Amen. Please join me in singing our gospel hymn.